This is Rekha-Mix After Hours.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. I have no idea which one, but we are joined tonight by your friends and my friends. We have Andy, we have Telmo, we have Pete, and I think we need to jump in and attack the effluent in El Room. What do we call it? The novel coronavirus.
The novel
coronavirus.
COVID-19. Pete, you've been my source of information on this because I've done an ostrich and stuck my head in the sand. I'm going, I don't want to know. It's terrifying.
Yeah, so
Fill us in.
It's obviously, the world is full of paranoia. Everyone's freaking out. I thought we'd tackle it from a slightly different angle. There's plenty of information and good and bad and whatever out there. So I thought the approach that we could consider is the potential impact on our sort of lines of business.
Our little corner of the world.
So the first one, and this is the one that struck me initially when the reports started coming from China and talking about the factory shutdowns, was it'd be the supply chains for equipment.
More importantly, your Innovation Summit.
Yeah, that as well. But I mean, this affects virtually all manufacturers to some degree.
Yeah.
I mean, even the ones that are fabricated maybe elsewhere, it's very invariably, if you look inside, they're the potentially components that have come from China.
Mm. Totally. I mean, apart from, the kind of scientists were saying it's not too much of a problem with shipping. So you reckon it's just, you know, factories closing, the actual workforce kind of issue rather than any worries about imports and exports?
Yeah, I mean, the nature of the way the sort of politics is structured in China, they've got the ability to just issue these edicts and they just literally shut down everything. I mean, the country to a degree, not so much on the periphery, but certainly sort of radiating out from the sort of the point of the sort of the most intense
radiating infections. Out of Wuhan.
Yes, but I think it's affected some of the other manufacturing sectors, but Wuhan is a particularly large manufacturing area.
Okay.
So, I mean, the certain brands, there's quite a few brands, it's virtually, I can't think of anybody that's not affected in some way or not.
Yeah, unless they do absolutely everything in-house in their own country.
Yeah, but you've still got
that's why I'm not worried about my Crane Song Quantum on the way. It's made in Minnesota, so it's all happy days, so screw you guys.
Can you be assured that every component in there is actually made in Minnesota?
Where do the actual converter chips come from?
Screw you.
We're just busy there ruining your fun, unfortunately.
That's fine. Someone should bring me back down to Earth. Oh,
your poor Crane Song.
I mean,
I've been waiting for it for a year, man. I don't care.
Even manufacturers where you assume that they emanate from a certain country or a certain location, invariably you flip it over and it's just made in China on the bottom.
Some part of it, in one way or another, it's definitely a thing. I guess the weird thing is it kind of puts it in perspective is how much actually comes out of that place and how, like, you know, it's a beating heart of the world in terms of manufacturing, surely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of issue that America is having with China at the moment because they delegated so much of their manufacturing to China, which was very profitable for a lot of US corporations.
And then
there's a major pushback because that's obviously had an effect on it's manufacturing kind of like inside America and the political climate at the moment, or has been for the last couple of years, has been a sort of a bit of a pushback.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of joke in a way, isn't it? You know, with the whole America first thing, we're going to take away everything from here and there, and we're going to do everything solely based on ours. It's like, right, now it's time to put it to the test, guys, because it's going to start stopping.
Well, I mean, you've got major manufacturers like Apple talking about shortage of iPhones.
What will the Western world do without our iPhones?
Without the iPhones and the fairy lights. Without the iPhones and the fairy lights, also made in China, what are we going to do? You know, where's Great Gatsby? I'm starting to worry.
You can't go wrong, man. You can't go wrong. Everything is made in China, specifically that region of Huan. There is not only obviously in the technology world, but it's the one that we get most affected with. But let's say that, you know, you're buying a computer, the PCBs, the motherboards, they're all most likely will be made over there. You know, we really need to focus on the people, because people are the ones who really, you know, they're staying at home. They're not working. They're struggling to get food on the table, because, you know, we're lucky enough to live in the West. But, you know, I don't want to get into politics, but obviously they do have a hard time down there.
How long do you reckon before retail closer to home, like shops and things, are starting to get affected?
Well, I think we're already seeing it, because we all know that there's a massive uncertainty in respect to some products. And we know that either the manufacturers or the retailers are already casting doubt on stuff that's already been ordered, and some of it's been ordered for some time, and they're already sort of foreshadowing or predicting that these deliveries will be delayed. As far as I can tell, manufacturing in China has been pretty slow for the last month. It's amazing even that month how that's going to really start feeding into, and already has started feeding into, supply chains. If this continues, I know there is a push in China to try and get manufacturing started, because there is a consideration that the financial impact of this issue may be even worse than the
humanitarian.
Yeah, it's a bit like what we were saying earlier. It's like you've got that kind of that seesaw, is whether or not it's, you know, people or keeping the economy going.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, to go into it. And I think that's the really interesting thing that you kind of touched on, Telmo, is that it starts to make you realize that all of these goods that we get from these places, it's not just made in China. That's not just a logo. It's made by some guy or some woman that's, you know, not doing too great anyway.
Yeah.
And to take that away from them, and it's like all of a sudden, if these people start missing, is you start to realize the value in terms of what, well, just the manufacturing.
What China gives to the entire world.
Yeah, basically, what the people of China give to the entire world.
Because products might be assembled here, they might be assembled in America, but they are made in China. You can't go wrong with that. And also the fact, and now just swifting slightly into Europe, things are not looking too great here for us, are they?
No, and that's the second part of this that I wanted to come on to. Obviously, we've got the initial supply chain issues that we've just discussed, but, I mean, the predictions do seem to suggest it's going to come here. None of us at this stage know exactly what the impact is going to be, but without getting too hyperbolic about it, you can see that it's certainly going to affect us in a retail context, because people aren't going to be out shopping if it gets to that stage. Hopefully mail order side of things potentially can continue without any issue, but that's dependent on the availability.
Dependent on supply.
Logistics, but supply aside, there's still quite a lot of residual stock in the UK for various things. I mean, again, that will deplete if that's not restocked from China.
Well, I presume there's some sort of preparation as well for this, because
it came out of nowhere. I can't see there being any preparation for it, to be honest. I feel like with a lot of this stuff, I'm sure there are back orders placed for everything, and it's, you know, how long are those back orders going to last? Because if they're not making anything, they're not making anything.
We're not far away from that notification that you get in Plague Incorporated where it goes, a new virus has been detected in Somalia, or whatever, wherever you start. Yeah. We're only a few days after that's happened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's pretty weird, but I don't know how much preparation you can do for something like this on that scale. You know, if it had been a country not China, it might have been different, but, you know, I feel like with those guys, and I may be wrong, but it's like that wheel is constantly turning. If the wheel starts, or the wheel stops, then it's like, oh, okay, what eventuality could you have prepared for to do that? Something must have gone seriously wrong for it to really be in that kind of scenario. So I don't know how much preparation there could have been, to be honest.
I don't think you can necessarily, but no one expects, although there's been sort of predictions of this type of thing, but it's very difficult to take on the enormity of the extraneous impact that sort of emanates out from something like this. And if you think about, supply chains aren't as long or as voluminous, if that's the right way of describing them, as you would think. I mean, if you think about something a bit more closer to home, which has been talked about in a different context, is the car manufacturing supply chains. It's all just in time. You know, no one wants to hold stock. I mean, and you see that in a lot of areas, because it's stock, especially in technology, stock ages, or doesn't age well, because potentially there's always newer and better products. So it's not something that you can stack it high and sit on.
Yeah.
Readily, you want to get the latest and greatest in. You want to flog it, and you want to get the next lot of latest and greatest. And you know, the stuff. Although China is on the other side of the world, literally to us, in some respects. You know, the speed that stuff is fabricated over there and got over here is pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, yeah.
I know that a lot of it will come by sea, by container, but even that is, you know, with the shortcuts.
What, about 20 days, if that?
Yeah, it's got to be around about a month, 6 weeks to a month, it's max.
Yeah.
I would imagine for
and
that time.
I mean, when you think about it, when did we first start, you know, obviously there's when we started hearing about it to when it actually started, but, you know, we must be kind of getting around about that.
Yeah, we're getting very close, because the shutdown has been, I would say, between 4 and 5 weeks.
There we go.
When they've really sort of started
clamping down on it.
Yeah, I mean, we're not right at the cutting edge of that type of logistics. We're at the tail end of it, so we're only getting what we've been told about, you know, whether our pre-orders or orders that we've got in the pipeline are going to arrive on time or arrive at all.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I wanted to bring the subject more closer to home. So, as I said, the effect that we're going to potentially experience locally. So, you know, not only us being affected personally, but I was thinking about other types of situations like venues.
Yes. Live
gatherings.
Music,
yeah, live music is potentially going to be impacted.
Well, people are more reluctant to go out, aren't they? So, because of this, really, it's inevitably is affecting services, but also entertainment. The one that I'm most concerned with, really,
is the Modular Cafe, and how many people from Hazelmere. That literally, we have a Hazelmere contingent that shows up every month.
See, guys, so go scared. To Hazelmere. There we go.
Dear. Don't go to Hazelmere.
Don't go to Hazelmere. That's ground zero. Yeah.
Ground zero.
Well, it is at the moment.
I don't know. The only other thing that I would say is, you know, as good as it is to have a conversation about it, and as good as it is to open up a dialogue, devil's advocate would be everything is going to... If we take this approach that it's a like a biological war zone out there, then things are really going to start coming into hand, and maybe it's more of a question, you know, what can people do to prevent getting anything from here or from that, and how much of an impact is it going to kind of have? And if you make it out to be this thing, then of course things are going to slow down, because people are going to be naturally inclined to be afraid of it. Now, I'm not saying that it's wrong to kind of take that into consideration, but how much of a bad situation, how much gas are you throwing on the fire, is probably the only way that
that's always a difficult call. But even without and I haven't seen any sort of real sign of mass hysteria yet, but give it a week or so, if it progresses like it has progressed in some of the other countries in Europe or South Korea or somewhere like that, you know, the dynamics of it is all going to change. I certainly believe that over the next month, you're going to see quite a lot of modification in public behaviour. Mm. I mean, and it's going to come in stages, so people are going to respond in respect to how the news is coming in.
Yeah.
And how closely it affects them, how localised it is to their geographic
situation.
Well, it's
a bit like you were saying today, or this morning, you were checking one particular news outlet's headline, which was a bit doom and gloom, to be changed over to something ever so slightly more positive.
Yeah, the news is the turnover in news is pretty quick.
So you wonder, but you say that, you wonder how many people woke up and saw that headline, and a couple of phone calls were made. It's like, this isn't gonna happen, dude. Like, you gotta change that up now.
Well, the headline
without
was,
getting a bit too like
the headline, you know, that I saw, which was in, you could say, a relatively respectable paper, but I don't know if any papers are that respectable. They all are then. But the headline actually made the headlines on the news, because that's how dramatic the headline was. So, as I say, it's difficult to weigh up. We can only just try and behave in accordance with the suggestions that have been made by the various sort of experts, and just see how the whole thing plays out. But, you know, no one really knows how this is going to play out.
No, I mean, no one knows, but I mean, the most important thing is to keep tuning in to Rack Addict After Hours.
And washing your hands.
Washing your hands, that's always good as well. Yeah. We've been religiously...
Listen while washing your hands.
yeah, we've all been really enjoying the hand sanitizer at work today.
I've been smothering myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they give it a good skin. Sniff afterwards, and it's all cool. Yeah.
Delicious. Yeah, let's step hands. Away from the slightly depressing and terrifying topic, if we can. Unless anybody has any other suggestions, I have a little something that I ran across on the interwebs, because that's
internet.
The only place that I live these days. I think it was Tom Whitwell of Music Thing Modulo on his Instagram. He had a book about a really weird Swedish modular synthesizer format. So you haven't got the picture in front of me that I do. I will show it to my colleagues as I'm talking. So you can see we've got these kind of boxes. They're all kind of a regular shaped box. We're talking vaguely large electroharmonics pedal sized thing, as far as I can tell. They've got these connectors on all the sides, and you kind of slot them together sideways like Lego or something. But it's a modular synthesizer format, the Dataton System 3000.
Well, that's catchy, isn't it?
Sort of modular synthesizer. I wish I could be the guy to come up with these names.
Dataton. Dataton now, actually, they're still a company. They make sort of video server type things for large installations in public places and for huge venues and all this kind of stuff. But this is all their vintage stuff from, I think, 1977 to 78.
Andy. As soon as I see that colour scheme, it screams out to me vintage.
What, this? Yeah, it's this lovely kind
it's
of
that kind of like
off
cream,
grey.
Yeah, off grey cream kind of thing. And I'm like, cream. That looks like something out of EMI.
Yeah,
do you know what
it
I mean?
Looks so cool. And I know nothing about it. But my question is, because I did some extensive Googling and found out so little. And being of the internet generation, now I just go...
That's a worry.
Exactly, I'm just shrugging.
Have you tried books?
What? What are they?
What?
Exactly. Like,
that's the analog format I've heard so much about.
Oh, yeah, you have to use your hands. But, I mean, where do I go from here? Because the next option is real human literature and physical objects and things, but, like,
are they even
where
mentioned
do I go?
Vintage synth?
Do they have a phone number?
They didn't come up on Vintage Synth Explorer.
Okay, so that rolls that one out.
Do they have a phone number or an email?
There is a book, which is what Tom Whitwell posted. I think my only option is to go and find that book and just digest it.
That is so not 21st century. If you can't find the answer out in 30 seconds, then it's not worth knowing. Come on, Ben. Wake up.
Is book a PDF? I don't know what that means.
No, seriousness, do they not have a website or a number or anything?
No, they do, but they've moved on. It's not.
It's not a thing anymore.
It's an ancient product from 77 to 78.
Right, now that makes sense why it's in that off-grade.
Of course.
I thought this was a new thing.
No, not at all.
What do we know about this product?
Oh, I know nothing.
Absolutely.
Literally, I can't find anything out about it other than it's a bit strange. There's some envelopes, filters and oscillators and a strange little computer
thing.
And
aside from that, it just looks pretty cool.
I'm likely never going to see one. I'm never going to touch one.
Is that a screen?
I think
surely that can't be a screen.
Oh, no, it's not. You've got dot matrix display. That's just a list of instructions.
Okay.
Oh, it's amazing. A sticker, basically, not a screen.
Exactly. I think it was partly used for education, but
it looks very sort of acoustic lab.
Yeah,
type of
that
type,
it really does. Right. But I just really want to know about it, even though I'm never going to see one.
But two of those, I would say the units are about, what would you say about, what's the dimension, but two of them look like a 19-inch rack.
Possibly.
Width.
Like I said,
they look like half rack width.
Yeah. I mean, to me, they just look like the big electroharmonics pedals.
Is this something that was put on Reddit or Instagram or what?
I saw it on Instagram, but after my Googling, I found some Reddit stuff. I found the original manufacturer's website.
Have you not thought
not
about
a massive
sliding
amount
in with a DM there. To ever
Is there a sort
it?
Of small fraternity of hardcore enthusiasts that sort of trade them, or
I'm pretty sure someone will pick it up.
They're so rare that they're.
I think they're really. I'm going to have to do some proper diving in. But
yeah, that's your homework.
I think. Yeah, that's my homework, and I think you should join in too if you're a bit of a modular nerd, because it could be quite fun.
If you would like to ping us all the what you've got, and then we can all dig in.
Yeah, we can have a look. We can put it up on within the if there's a description of this podcast, we can take a gander. Anybody had an exciting something happen this week? How have we been?
Pretty good. Did some filming. That was fun yesterday, so I'm pretty wiped. But other than that, that was cool. I feel like I'm learning so much these days about things that are completely un-audio related. But it was so good having you up, Pete, for what you were doing with Ben and when you did the promo video for us, because I kind of half know what I'm talking about as well. When it's like, oh, okay, right, we definitely need to make space for the light and this, that, and the other and do all of this, and I've got questions that I can actually ask a videographer to try and make their lives easier, other than helping them take their things to and from the car. But then there's, like, the other risks as well. Obviously,
well, like that horrifying radiator. That was a risk.
We don't talk about that.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, we do not talk about the radiator. Absolutely. Oh. That's completely off limits. That's to be dealt with by qualified people, which it did get dealt with maybe 2 days after the fact.
I think that the original phrasing was dealt with by qualified idiots.
Quite possible. Burfield Recording Studio. Dealt with by qualified idiots.
That's your tagline.
No, the big worry, or the kind of thing that I was thinking, I didn't realise, because obviously a light bulb, like the one that we've got here, is like, oh, that's fairly hot. But
it's one of those halogen, filamenty, it's just the... they call them Edison bulbs if you want to buy them, because they've got the fancy filament in them.
Oh, yep. All right. But the light that this guy had was absolutely tonk. It would literally be... Like, if I looked into it, it would just be smouldering eye holes. And he was on this big boom stand, and he lifted it up, and we're kind of looking up there. And it's like, yeah, it gets pretty hot.
Is he going to set fire to your ceiling?
That's the thing that I was thinking. I was, like, kind of looking out for burn patches.
Nah.
But it's just, like, all of this stuff that you just kind of, like, again, without having you there, for all of the stuff that you've done with us, that I just wouldn't really have thought about. I would have just probably been in the controls, oh, yeah, setting up a light, nice. instead of that, I was watching that ceiling, like, okay, no, it looks fine, Well, shall we open up the window a little?
Yeah.
A
little whiff of smoke coming off
the Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you got that polystyrene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, the polystyrene ceiling.
Yeah, but... No, other than that, though, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Got into the Facebook advertising metrics and et cetera, but that was Kieran Singh, so I have absolutely no idea. Mm. He just basically says we should do this because I've done my research. I'm like, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Basically boosting posts.
Essentially, yeah.
Always works. That's why you pay for it.
Yeah, kind of, but it's the little details of it. The phrase that I kept hearing was, you've got to feed the algorithm.
Right.
Feed the algorithm. Feed the algorithm.
What does it like to eat?
It's like
it
a Tamagotchi.
Breakfast kind of thing?
Data.
Keywords. keywords.
Hashtags.
So I found with some of my colleagues have got quite big followings on Facebook that they realise that even though they had a lot of following to their sort of band page and type of thing, even when they post... they're not reaching all the followers. Actually, Facebook throttles it back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To encourage you to actually pay money and then have it boost to...
The algorithm stuff's amazing. Like, my girlfriend has over 15,000 followers on Instagram.
All right, mate.
And a lot of her...
You're welcome.
Her posts will get...
Do you want to drop the at in?
Yeah. some of her posts will get, like, the regular is maybe 200, 250 likes. But recently, the algorithm must have changed. She's getting sort of over 1,000 on every single... post, but that was just that. One day it suddenly just kind of clicked because Instagram's obviously gone in and done some tweaking.
Well, I think this is the thing. It's ridiculous how about the algorithm it is, because it's going to start, because obviously Instagram wants more people to engage with their site, so it's a little bit of a swings and roundabouts thing. They want people to be able to engage with their site, from everything that I've been able to pick up. So by doing that, it obviously wants to encourage people to be put in contact with the things that they're going to engage with. But there is also that pay-to-play element of it that you know, it's that, like, kind of juggle about it. But I think when you start getting into a certain territory, when it's like, oh, actually, the person that's uploading this is also bringing their following, we may as well work to promote them, because we're also, you know, it's going to make our place look better as well.
And we can put ads on that. Probably
100%.
Yeah, but they're looking at your content, like, more than anything, really. It's about how much you engage, how you engage, if you treat your followers like friends or fans. Or
I mean, most of the time on these websites, there'll be a clause in the terms of use which will say, okay, we're allowed to use all of any of the content you upload here without asking your permission. We can do whatever the hell we want with it. There's always that kind of stuff as well.
It's not just that, though. I think one of the things that got pointed out to me pretty early on from someone that is really well, you know, that does well and does social media and blah, blah, blah for a living, was that it's like what a lot of people forget about the social media thing is that there's a social in front of media. It's not just a place for you to smunk all of your photos and put those on. You want to actually engage with people and you want to interact with people because that's what pushes the site forward. It's what pushes you forward and it what encourages people to use because everyone likes interaction and everyone likes feeling to be a part of something. So if you're kind of pushing that element of it, they're going to theoretically reward you for it because that you're essentially doing the job of the website. And then again, you get into the algorithms that will work out what's the best way of doing this and how you interact. So, you know, what you were mentioning, how bloody rude.
He's got his phone on loud. How could he?
Absolutely disgusting. Apologises.
But what I was saying is it seems to be all about feeding that algorithm. And I would assume that at some point that, for what you were saying with your missus, at some point it clicked. It's, okay, right, this is how it's going. It's gotten smarter, it's learned, and right, let's start pushing this to the right people. It's probably crossed a set of threshold or parameters of like you've been doing blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
So we'll
put you into the next rank. Of
kind of. Yeah. Yeah. It makes more sense.
The good thing about that is that's when you get the snowball effect because if they're pushing it harder and you get more interaction, then you're more likely to pick up more followers and so forth.
Yeah. We got a £300 like blender the other day, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
Just because of all this.
Hooray!
Really?
Free kitchen appliances
from a manufacturer.
Yeah. Magi Mix.
Did you clean it up? You don't know if it's coming from China.
I haven't used it.
Did you? I feel like did they just sort of just contact you and say, "Would you like this?"
I think so. I don't really pay attention. Stuff just arrives and I go, "What have you got now?"
Really? So does she have to mention it or
sometimes
feature it?
Yeah. Not all the time.
I would imagine there's an expectation potentially.
I remember a guy from Gibson that this was going back years and years ago before there was such an obvious. In fact, this is again pretty interesting. Is I think it happened within the last year. Is that if something gets put on which has been like a product placement or something like that,
you have to say it's
an ad.
Yep.
You have to say it's an ad. Whereas back in the first one, now that I think about it, that I really became aware of, funnily enough, with Gibson, and it was when they started doing the Tunomatic things.
Oh, wait, you mean that robot tuner?
Yeah, the robot
situation.
Tuner, right?
Yeah.
And it was people saying, you know, that all of a sudden had these Gibson acoustic guitars or whatever, and it's like, oh, and it's got this really nifty feature. I can just and then here we go.
Yeah, but that still happens nowadays with YouTubers. That's how
it totally does, but it's so much more
policed,
transparent, and policed. Yeah, yeah, it's like people.
You mean nowadays?
Yeah, nowadays people will either if you don't do it, they'll call you out on it, or it's got to be super transparent. It's like, oh, hey guys, I got sent this by them.
Yeah, because they want genuinely for you to review those guitars or that piece of equipment.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
To give your take into it for someone that's an influencer to other people.
I hate the word influencer.
I know, right?
It's such a thing.
It hurts me.
It's a big thing. It's exactly what they are, though. 100%. Oh, come on, dude. You must have seen something that's like it's been, like, you can't see the quote air quotes, but
yeah,
you know, that's been influenced, and you thought, I'll have that.
Yeah,
it's stupid things. The worst one that I got about it, my missus still talks about it to this day, and I realise that I'm a sucker for product placement. Jurassic World.
What about? Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm going somewhere with this. In Jurassic World, keep it going. In the control room, in the control room, the guy has a giant thing of Pepsi. And it falls down, but you can see the Pepsi logo, and you can see it fall, and it's like obviously full of Pepsi, so it runs like
brilliant.
And I kind of turned around to my missus and I was like, "You know what I really fancy?
Pepsi,
a bucket of Pepsi."
There you go.
Know what I really fancy today? I need a bucket of Pepsi Max sugary drink that you can buy from your local store now.
Dude, it was the same. But the worst part about it is I wanted to go to the cinema because I knew that was the only place, like in the UK. Obviously, it's not like in the States where you can get these like buckets of just things.
Child
that, like,
size. That's the size of a child.
Exactly right. Whereas, like here, you've got to go to a cinema to get that like disgusting size of drink, and I was like, God, I don't drive. I said to my missus, like, "Do you fancy going down the showcase?" She was like, "Why? Do you want to see a film?" So, I mean, I could do, but I just really want some Pepsi. I'm awful.
They're inside your brain.
I've got one for you then.
Yeah.
Product placement in a film. So close to the end of Venom, the more recent. There was a Mackie Big Knob.
Oh yeah,
no way.
And it was the active one.
The active one.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, funnily enough, one of the things that I did, two things that I noticed was in La La Land, if any of you guys have watched that, the Kronos, that was pretty, like, very much, this is Korg.
We totally went over this one, like, in one of our first podcasts.
Did we?
We were talking about music that we recognised in films, because there was Buchla in a music easel in a Zac Efron film.
Oh, no.
That hurt me.
On this La La Land, it was the Kronos and the Rolly Seaboard.
Ooh.
And I was like, that is like, it's like one of the ones with the Rolly Seaboard. It's like in a dark room and it's like a gig and everything like that. But then you kind of like put it on. It's like, no, that is dead. Like, I can see that 100%. Someone has just slid that in there. Like, yeah.
I don't think it helped Rolly's business model. They're not doing well.
Are they not?
Well, no, we don't sell any of their stuff.
The little things seem like quite good. The Rolly Seaboard.
That's a shame, though. Because they are bringing different stuff into the table.
You know, the worst part about it is I was talking to someone. I met someone that shopped at the shop that we worked at.
Shopped at the shop that we shop at. Yep.
Yes. And I met them after the fact, and I kind of forgot that they obviously shop at our place and that I've sold them gear in the past. And we were talking about Rolly, and I immediately jumped in, and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm not the biggest fan of Rolly and the things that they're doing. I was like, you sold me a 25. And I was like, wait, what are we talking about? The big one or the small one? Because I don't like the big stuff. I think it's pointless.
Yeah.
It's too expensive for what it is. And it turned out to be the little one. And I was like, oh, okay, right.
You're safe.
I see. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I like that stuff. That's cool. But the big stuff, nah, it's too expensive.
Not big stuff.
Where do we start with this?
Wow.
Oh, my God, I don't know.
Andy's Facebook.
Oh, my Facebook page. Stuff.
We went on a tangent, didn't we?
I love a little ramble. It's good fun.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
What have you been up to, Tillman?
Me? Well, this week...
Any Egypt news?
Still editing, still recording, still getting... trying to organise the guys to get it all done. I did a little update with Andy this week as well. He will be the one mastering and mixing.
Ooh, lovely.
So,
you know where he'll be mastering
that? Beautiful.
Burfield Recording Studios.
Exactly.
Lovely stuff.
Exactly.
Giving him the plug. He's incapacitated.
Do check their website. Do check their Facebook. Beautiful studios. What have I been doing? I've been doing that. I've been catching up with some assignments as well. But most of all, I've been listening to plenty of music. Mm. I've been catching up with all the stuff that I haven't been hearing, really, things that I want to hear in the past 2 to 3 weeks. I did catch up this week, and there's a couple of albums that stand out for me. One of them, the first one, is I don't know if you guys have heard of David Crosby.
Rings a bell, but not really.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Yes, from the 60s. So he's still alive. Believe
oh, thank
it or not.
God, another one made it
he's
out.
He's not died yet.
He, in 2018, and this was a couple of years ago, he released this album called Hear If You Listen. Now, what's so interesting about this album is how... Not only he's obviously a man that's been around for quite a long time, but the people that he gets into this album to record with him, it's very interesting. Is the Lighthouse Band, which consists of Michael League from Snarky Puppy.
Oh, nice. What instrument is that? Because I'll know the face.
So the band leader, the bass player.
Oh,
from
nice.
Snarky
nice.
Puppy, Michael League and Becca Stevens as well. That. Worked and played with Jacob Collier,
nice.
So she's out and about.
So you know, enough amateurs basically.
Nothing but amateurs, exactly. So what
giving
I like
his kids a shot.
Yeah, what I like about this album is that it's not only a throwback album from some of the stuff. You can hear one of the songs, I think it's 1967, that was originally a demo recorded in 1967, but they kind of like redone it. So the beginning of the song is the demo, and then it kind of shifts into like a modern day produced song, which is very interesting. I loved it. And of course, David Crosby's vocals and lyrics are beautiful. Mm. So I totally recommend that. And
what was the album called again?
Hear If You Listen.
As in here, location, or listen here?
Hear If You Listen, as in here, location, and listen
gotcha.
With your ears.
Lovely stuff.
so that's one of the things I've been listening to this week, and also Tame Impala's new album.
I'm looking forward to this because I still haven't heard it. How's it going? Is it good?
Well,
no. Moving on.
Me and Telmo were talking about it.
Yeah,
today.
We were. Okay, so just a bit of an insight. Tame Impala is a band from the 2010s. Their sound was initially designed to be some sort of this indie psychedelic revival from the 60s.
Yeah, very, it's definitely a bit of a throwback kind of thing, right?
Yeah, so at the time, so they're a band that I've been following for years now. I've seen them live. They're an incredible band. Kevin Parker is an absolute genius. I love him. Not about a couple of weeks ago, he released The Slow Rush, which is their latest album.
Is that the one with the kind of sand dune?
Yeah,
you
got
the one.
Cover.
Yeah.
Yep. It looks great. Great artwork, as usual. Well, they've worked with Jeff Polansky for album artworks previously for Inner Speaker and Lonerism, which I really enjoyed.
Related to Roman Polanski?
Oh, we really hope not. I don't know.
He was in the... Okay, probably. No, I can't go into that.
Don't know. But anyway, about the album, it's different because it kind of, for me, in my perspective, if you compare it with Currents, it kind of restates their sound, or Kevin Parker's sound for Tame Impala, which is this, with Currents, they made a change from this psychedelic rock into disco, 70s disco sound. For me, this album, The Slow Rush, I don't think it's brilliant. I don't think it's crazy good. I think there's a really two or three songs in there, but I don't think it's incredible. There's really good grooves. That's what I felt about it. Really, I need to dedicate some more time to it. What do you think, Andy?
I always feel like the best albums are the ones that you have to work at.
Yeah,
really, you grow a better relationship with them if you have to sit with something and really let it grow on you.
I mean, that's a weird one, because I've listened to the record a couple of times, and I was saying to Selma that I don't think for me this feels like the precursor to where I think they're gonna go to next. You know, we were saying, for me, I'm not saying that they peaked at Lonerism at all, but I think they peaked at what they were doing with Lonerism. And it makes sense that when they then went on to Currents, they moved in the direction that they did. Because I think one of the things that you've got to kind of sympathize with some bands for is it's like, okay, if I don't move now, I'm going to get known for this. Or alternatively, it's like, I feel like actually I've done this now. Like, I feel like that's probably the best of that I'm going to get out.
So what you reckon, this album's a little bit of a sonic stopover until the next
kind
thing?
Of, yeah. Well, I don't know, because they did Currents, which is of the same kind of thing. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on this at all.
Their sound is still there, though. The elements that you would consider this is Tame Impala.
It feels for me like the techniques are still there, like from an audio perspective, the techniques are still there. I just don't think, for me, nothing hit home. That's the easiest way I can describe it. Like, there are songs of theirs that it's like you listen to and they go across the board and it's like that, you know, that's a track. That's really cool. I just didn't get that out of that record. It's like I said, my brother recommended to me. I can't remember it was the Breathe song. I'll find out which one it is. But he was like, wait until you hear that track and you'll be like, you'll be sucked into it. You'll get it. And you'll really like it. What is it called? It's Breathe Deeper. And it's like, listen to it, you'll get it, you'll really like it, it's a banger and everything like that. And then, like I said, I was listening to the album, and I was like, when is this track going to kind of come in? And then I realised that it was two tracks after what I was listening to, and it just made no impact on me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because I was like thinking, like, oh, okay, right, I'm waiting for this track, I need to, that this thing is going to like hit me as hard as like Let It Happen, or... You know, some of their other
Let
songs.
It Happen. Such a good song.
It is, right?
It's a righteous banger.
Yeah. Would you just say a righteous banger?
That's what it is.
It's a righteous banger. Yeah. Praise the Lord, everybody.
Righteous banger.
Love it.
That's never come out of my mouth.
For me,
I said cool beans out loud.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
In front of a lot of customers today. It was awkward.
Well, I bet that worked out for you.
Not really.
Posthumous Forgiveness is the song that really hit me, because it was different. It was a ballad that I've never really heard Kevin Parker doing it this way. Maybe because I'm a man, in that same sort of style.
I tell you, the one that I really did like was the opener to that record.
One More Year.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yep.
That was really, really cool. But, I, like I say, nothing just kind of, like, grabbed me, and I was like, I'm going to listen to this record again. It's, even from the perspective, it's like, I'm not going to go back to, because for me, I don't know about you guys, but what will typically happen when I listen to a record is that I'll play it through, and I'll be like, okay, right, that song, that's the one that I really like. That's really cool. I'm going to listen to that one again and again, and I might like forget to put it on repeat or something like that. And then the next one comes in, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's really, really cool. And then that's how basically an album gestates with me,
yep,
to the point where it's like, I've got that track that I really like, but I've explored the album a little bit more now, so I'm going to listen to it in its different stages,
yeah,
as it kind of goes through, and then I like the album.
They
so
do
you just
grow on.
Haven't
you,
got your starting. But point
I just
on this
haven't.
Album
I, yeah, I haven't been able to find that thing. It's like we were talking about it because the Arctic Monkeys, we feel, did something relatively similar from where they were going with AM to
Tranquility Base Hotel
and Casino.
Yeah. Casino, yeah.
But the song 4 out of 5 was that one for me that it was like, cool, that's my little base. That's my little tranquility base. I can take that and move away with the record. It's like I might just like, oh, let's play it for another couple of songs and let's see how we get on. It's like, oh, let's go back and then see how this leads into. But I've always got that home base where I can come back to, and it's like, okay, right, that's the record. Or, you know, that's that song that I get in. It doesn't have to be, you know, I mean, all of the ones that I've mentioned have been like singles that have obviously been put out, and it's like, okay, because they thought that there was that kind of hook or that kind of commercial aspect of it for people to grab a hold of, which isn't a bad thing at all. But, you know, typically it will be. But, you know, for me, I'm trying to think what album it is. I think it might be Lonerism, but my favourite record on that is probably Elephants.
Okay.
If Big that, is that on the record?
I'm not quite sure if it's in Lonerism or Inner Speaker.
That's on the one with the
that
really
might be a different
the swirly.
Dum da dum da dum da dum.
Yeah, that's Lonerism. That's Lonerism.
That is Lonerism. See, that's my favorite. That for me is probably my favorite record.
I'm not gonna lie. I will never forget the day that I've heard Tame Impala for the first time with Inner Speaker, and it really threw me off my chair because it was something that I've never heard before. This weird mix between John Lennon and Hendrix,
yeah,
with this really trip hop kind of,
yeah,
weird drum,
yeah,
sounds that I absolutely loved it, and I still love Currents. But I think just to wrap it up, I think that the Slow Rush is an album that is, as I said, a continuation of Currents. I've give it some time. I'm gonna give it another week.
I'm gonna listen to it throughout the week as well.
Maybe it will grow
and
on me,
and we can,
yeah,
we can kind of come back to it. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I'd be well up for that. Yeah,
let's do it.
Pete, that brings us on to you. What have you been up to this week?
Well, obviously, exciting is a relative term. So, beginning of the week, I actually got my custom earplugs fitted.
Oh, nice.
So, I've actually got those at sort of minus 20 decibels, so I can just about hear speech if someone's standing right in front of me. So I've debated whether to wear them in the store, in the shop.
Just pretend
I'm going to get accused
no
of ignoring customers then. But at least it's going to cut out a lot of the... Because as we all experienced, it can get pretty noisy, and it's not pleasant because it can get...
It was bad today.
It can get cacophonous when you've got all these sort of... various people noodling on instruments, and
today it was like there was a bit with three pianos and a synth, which was pretty horrifying all at once.
Yeah, they seem to have the knack of ignoring each other and just ploughing on.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the thing that I find really interesting. People will often come up to me, I don't know about you guys, and they say, how do you deal with this? And I'm like, to be honest, I just don't hear it anymore. Like, there's something about me that means I can tune it out, and for most things I can do, but what for me, when three pianos start playing at the same time and they start playing something completely different, it is impossible to ignore.
It's just a cacophony.
I got to get out of the room.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And then, or you get someone in another department letting rip with a Kemper or something.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all sorts of scenarios. Most of the time, I can just shut it out, as you say. Yeah.
There's
but
only so much
it
you can
just,
take.
Just gets to, and you want to storm over there and
throttle them.
Well,
grab
no,
by the neck.
Storm over there and then
politely throttle them out,
or offer them a pair of headphones.
Yeah, that's always that's the one.
So that was the beginning of the week, and then as we got closer to the end of the week, I actually managed to get the order for the Zenderlay in. So
yeah,
so that's coming Monday. So
ooh.
I know what I'm going to spend most of the day in the studio, I would imagine, once that arrives.
Nice.
So I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to be a time delay. So yeah, I'm going to have either a whole day of delivery anxiety.
Oh yeah,
or it's going to come nice and promptly, which I'm hoping it does, and then that will be straight in there, out the box and set up and.
Nice.
I'm going to have a sort of decent session on that, so I'm looking forward to that. Anything else? Not really. Not a lot. Spent a lot of time reading lots of paranoid news, which I won't go back into. Did a bit of panic buying.
Oh, have you bought your cans of beans?
Are you a doomsday prepper now?
No, I just thought it's prudent to get sort of at least some bits and pieces in. We don't tend to have a lot of things. I do lots of mini shops. I don't know how you are shopping.
Yeah, I'm the same. Very much.
I used to be back in the day when the kids were young, it was the big monster shop in one big trolley that you could barely wheel in the car park because it's so heavy, it's steering itself.
You do make a really good point without thinking about it. If people are like panic buying, then...
Yeah, I'm going to go get some beans on my way home.
Well, this is the thing that I was thinking about, like little sausages with beans. What if I have a craving for it at some point down the line?
And then
like,
you
I
ruin your doomsday preppage.
Well, no, it's not that I ruin it, but it's like people have ruined it for me because it's like all these people have gone out and bought their pork and beans without me like kind of thinking about it, thinking that they're going to prepare for the end of the world, and then it doesn't happen, and then I get to like
surplus of pork and beans.
No, a lack of. So I get like, I'm like Pete, I do mini shops, and it's like, I tell you what I really fancy is some little like pork and beans, and then it's like, go to it, and it's like the shelves have been cleared, and I can't get my pork and
you've got blue cheese, 7 carrots. And some pot noodles, and that's all that's left in the supermarket.
I might actually, to be fair, the one thing that I'm really thinking about is going down to like one of the Chinese outlets and just buying a big thing.
Count
noodles.
Me in.
Yeah. Well, if you want to do, there's a really good one in Reading. There's a big warehouse. If you want to come up,
I'm in.
But is it Ho Hing's? By any
chance? No, it's Siwu.
Okay, another one. Okay, because you could imagine there's a God knows how many Chinese restaurants are in every town, and they've got to be supplied from somewhere.
Yeah, right.
And Ho Hing's is the place.
Yeah, Ho Hing's. I think Ho Hing's has got quite a few branches.
Mm. Siwu is pretty good. You can get some really odd
is
stuff.
Is it quite
there
a big
well.
Place? Yeah.
It's pretty big.
So can you actually buy a box of the...
Yeah, 100%. Like, they've got all the packets underneath, and then for most of them, you can just get the big thing up.
So do they have the things like the live lobsters or anything like that?
They don't have anything alive, but they've got some real weird stuff in the freezer.
There's one our local one in this particular town. You go in on the freezer section. It's my favourite article that I've never figured out what it is, but it's always there, is you can buy some pig fat end. I don't know what it is, but, you know, pig fat end if you need it.
That's the description is pig fat end.
Yeah, that's all we get.
And is it all in Cantonese or
it's all characters.
You know, just thought, I'm just going to do this for you guys. You keep talking.
Just what, are you going to Google pig fat end for us? Yeah. Okay, lovely. Don't give me the pictures.
Well, my premise was that I'd do my panic buying before the panic buying starts.
Oh, yeah, the pre-panic
but
buying.
There was a certain amount I could tell there was a certain amount of panic buying going on.
Oh,
there
was certainly, what was missing?
Well, there was certainly the obvious stuff like hand sanitizers.
Oh, yeah.
And, lots of things like disinfectants and that type of stuff.
It's part of the intestine, I think.
Oh, joyous.
Oh, I'll tell you what, man, I bet that would be pretty good.
No.
No, I'll long cook it.
No.
But definitely like in a little stew for a little while.
No.
Yeah, no.
I'm all right.
It's when it comes to the things like the chicken's feet that I have to draw a line.
Oh, that's lovely.
I've
love
had
that.
Chicken feet before. That's good.
That. Really?
Yeah.
There's a particular Portuguese dish with chicken feet in it.
Okay, well, I'm obviously being a bit sniffy about it all.
Sorry, vegans. Sorry, vegetarians.
I'm not sorry. It's delicious. That's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, it is great. It is great.
Yeah,
pig's feet as well.
Pig's trotters are really good. There's a restaurant in London that I really want to go to that I always forget the name of, but their whole principle is nose to tail cooking, where it's, I think they get like 3 or 4 pigs in at the start of the week, and then they make those pigs go the whole week, and that's pretty much it. So you'll get like, you know, snout, trotters, blah blah blah. I think that one of the best things that they do is like the bone marrow, which is just like stewed for ages, and it's just, you know, you get in there with a spoon and everything. What's the name? It's like Heston something. Again, excuse
I'm
me while
thinking
I Google
Heston Blumenthal.
Yeah.
Well, that's that.
What's his name? Fergus Henderson.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry. Just in case that sounded appetizing to anyone.
Fair enough. What about you, Ben?
Well, I was going to be doing a video shoot in Germany on the Monday coming, but that was cancelled because hashtag coronavirus. So that's less cool. The only other thing is I can now do a shameless plug. Is hopefully the day this has been put on the internet, or the day after this is on the internet, my EP will be available on a cassette.
Oh,
my musical moniker. Ooh, I love the little... The
so how can we acquire one of
you
your cassettes?
You can go onto the Standard Tapes Instagram. So Standard Tapes, little tiny weenie cassette label. Standard Tapes Instagram, Bandcamp. You can buy the cassette, limited release on cassette, but you can also do the download as well.
Is there a digital download as well? Yeah?
There'll be a digital download, and then once the cassette's all sold out, it will be on streaming platforms as well. So
nice.
Look out for Robert Rhodes' Galactic Bathtub, my first EP.
That's amazing.
That's killer, dude.
Well done,
nice
man.
One. Well done.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's all ambient and a little bit mean, but also a little bit happy and relaxing.
Sounds a bit Douglas Adams, that title.
Exactly, it's that kind of vibe I was going for. But there's a bit of our good friend Nick, who was at the studio with Andy, Pete and I a while ago. He's on the last track.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
Nick is a beautiful keys player.
I might have to invest in a cassette player.
Yeah, I've got one at my parents' house, so I'm going to have to go there. Yeah, Nick is a beautiful human being, so he's on the last one.
He's a dude.
It's going to be good.
Nick Cohen.
Nick Cohen Music. He's on Instagram, and he is the loveliest boy.
He is, genuinely, yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of it for my week. And I think that's kind of it for this episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. It's been a bit of a longer one than we've had before, but I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening. It's a goodbye from me, Andy Telmo, and Pete. See you in the next one. Bye now.